From NPR and WBEZ Chicago, this is Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, the NPR News Quiz. I'm the turkey stuffed with chicken stuffed with Anchorman Bill Curtis. And here's your host at the Chase Bank Auditorium in Chicago, Peter Sagal.
Thank you, Bill. Thank you, everybody. We have a great show today. In fact, it's so good we've decided to broadcast it on Thanksgiving weekend when the need for good radio is at its most acute.
Because otherwise, you've got to go talk to your relatives again.
So instead, we're going to express our thanks to some of our favorite guests by replaying our interviews with them, because who doesn't love leftovers after Thanksgiving?
We begin with singer-songwriter Jewel, who joined us this fall to talk about her new memoir, in which she writes about growing up in rugged circumstances in Alaska.
Yeah, it was a very rural existence. It's also a very beautiful place. It's very rugged and demands that you work hard to make a living up there, but it's beautiful.
And one of the things you did was you were yodeling with your father in bars at the age of 8?
I was. Yeah, my dad and I became a duet when my mom left when I was 8, and I was probably the only fourth grader that went from elementary school right to the bar. Yeah.
Skipping those troublesome middle years before you... Well, you tell this story. You tell so many stories in the book, and I do recommend it. It's slightly harrowing, but there's one story you tell of, like, playing in biker bars, and the police would raid the biker bar, and you had to go hide in the bathroom?
Yeah, I knew. Obviously, I was underage, so the routine was I would go in the bathroom while the cops were there, and the biker men were always the most protective, actually. They was the best bars to sing in. And they would send their quote-unquote women in to keep me company. And I have amazing memories of me in button-up shirts with long, straight, brushed hair sitting there with all these biker women in various states of leather and acid-washed denim. And then being like, hey, kid, you sing beautiful. You want to sing at me and my old man's wedding? The son of a bitch.
That's awesome.
How did you not go crazy being subjected to all that? You
must. It taught me a lot, and I had a writer's heart, I think, always. I loved watching people, and I wrote about a lot of the characters from those days in a lot of my songs. But it taught me a lot, and it mainly was one of the biggest things that I think at 8, vowed never to drink, because I realized you can't outrun pain, and I saw people trying to do it by numbing themselves or medicating, and that it never worked. So it was actually pretty positive.
Wait a minute, it doesn't work?
Give me time.
I think what you mean, Jewel, is it hasn't worked yet. There's always a first time. Now, there's a particular part of your story I was amazed to read, and I want to get to it now. So bringing you forward a little bit in time, you're 15 years old. You're living by yourself in an unheated cabin near Homer, Alaska. You were commuting to work by horse, which I love.
Or hitchhiking, yeah.
Were there horse jams on the way into downtown Homer?
There were not, but the drive-thru was interesting.
I can imagine.
The McDonald's, yeah.
And you get an invitation to apply to Interlochen, the famous art school in Michigan. And well, tell me what happened next.
I was given a partial scholarship, and I needed to raise about $10,000, which I wasn't able to come up with. And so a bunch of the women in town and a bunch of my aunts helped me organize my first solo concert. I hadn't written any songs yet, but I did Cole Porter songs. And a lot of local businesses donated items, and we auctioned them off. And I made quite a bit of money, but I was still short. And Mr. Tom Baudette helped. He made sure I got off to school, and he helped write a check and sent me off. Yeah.
So I just want to clarify, because I love this. So you're like, you're 15 years old, you're living by yourself, you have no money, here is your chance to go to art school. And after the concert, you were still short how much money?
Well, this is getting quite personal.
Well, now in the book, you say that Tom Baudette, who you call Homer's resident celebrity, wrote you a check for $5,000.
Oh, I forgot I put it in there. So, yeah, sorry about that, Tom.
Wait a minute. No. You were getting all shy about information that I only knew because you wrote it in your book?
Right. Well, Jewel, hi, by the way.
It's
been a long time. And thank you so much for remembering that. But it's funny. I remembered it as $500.
Maybe it was. It seemed like $5,000.
I like your version better. But I also seem to recall that your Aunt Sharon was my bookkeeper at the time. And I just got to wonder now if I said, Sharon, why don't you write Jewel a check for $500? And
I always loved that Aunt Sharon.
Yeah, she was always very good to you. Me too.
So, Tom, now that we know the punchline to this part of the story, so you were like living in Homer and Jewel was 15 years old. So what did you know about Jewel then?
Oh, I mean, Jewel, I'm going to talk about you while you're sitting right there. Yeah, there was a lot of talented people in Homer, particularly in Jewel's family and her extended family, a very musical family and beautiful voices, all of them. And when Jewel took to a stage, and the first time I ever saw her was standing on that chair next to your dad at the club bar and yodeling, and the presence that this young girl had, and then by the time she was 15 and a young woman and singing, like the voice was like, everyone who heard Jewel was like, this girl has to get out of here. She has to go do something else because, I mean, it was her talent and her presence was just so startlingly above and beyond anything we had seen.
And what's interesting is you write in the book quite movingly and a little, again, harrowingly about showing up at Interlaken and all these rich kids who had grown up with support and money and intact families all there in their nice clothes and you're wandering around. You don't know how to do anything. You don't know how to act like they are. And it occurred to me, you're Harry Potter. Interlaken was Hogwarts. And Tom was your Hagrid.
I like that. Hagrid survives, right?
I think he makes it in the end. You're okay. So does Harry. So obviously, great things then happened. You had many adventures. There's a story about you opened for Bob Dylan, right?
Uh-huh.
Yeah, and that must have been pretty cool.
That was cool. You know, my first record failed for the first year, and so typically artists and labels will move on and make a second record. But then Bob Dylan took me out, and so I postponed that second album and toured with him, and he mentored me. And just every night went over my lyrics, and he's like, hey, what made you write that lyric? And I was like, I can't believe Bob Dylan is asking me about my lyrics. And he gave me books to read, and he was incredible.
You were able to understand what he was saying?
Yeah, I'm a great translator. He's used me in several countries.
Really?
Yeah, my Japanese Bob Dylan's really good. He's like, I don't, I do want.
So Bob Dylan will stand up and go, hey, what's nice to see you? And Jewel's like, he says, it's very nice to see you.
Yes.
I have to ask you this question because I rarely get a chance to do this, to confirm one celebrity story with another.
Yeah.
Rob Lowe wrote a book, and we interviewed him about the book, but not this particular story. He says that you were a guest star on his ill-fated TV show, Lion's Den, and you were great. He thought yours as an actor, your talent was as amazing as a singer, but that when it came time, you played his love interest to, like, make out, you wouldn't do it because you thought it was inappropriate for a married woman to be making out with another guy. That's what Rob Lowe says. Jewel, is this true?
That is true.
Is it?
Yeah, I didn't kiss Rob Lowe. I didn't know that would be such a big deal. Now, that said, you know, it was unprofessional of me. I mean, I agreed to do the gig, and the kissing was in the script. And I did one kissing scene with him, and people can Google it. So it happened. I just didn't do it the other times that was in the script because I don't think they asked me back. It was just where I was at the time.
I understand, but I'm glad to confirm it because I wouldn't want to think that Rob Lowe was a liar.
He was not.
Okay. Well, Jewel, it is a pleasure to talk to you and reunite you with your old friend Tom. But we have invited you here to play a game that this time we're calling...
We hope you sleep in a safe.
That's because for every Jewel, there's a Jewel thief out there. We're going to ask you three questions about jewel thieves. Answer two correctly, you'll win a prize for one of our listeners, Carl Castle's voice, on their voicemail. Bill, who is Jewel playing for?
Amy Thompson of Portland, Oregon.
Here's your first question. One of the most famous jewel thefts in history was the stealing of the Irish crown jewels in 1907, a crime that still has not been solved. The lead suspect, though, was the man who was supposed to be keeping the crown jewels safe. Why was he suspected? Was it A, because he used to gaze at them and say, someday you shall be mine. B, because he once got drunk and woke up wearing them around his neck. Or C, because his wife suddenly appeared wearing what looked like the Irish crown jewels, which she said she got as a present from her husband.
I'm going to go with B.
You're going to go with B? He got drunk and woke up with them around his neck?
Yeah.
You're right. That's what he did.
Really?
Yeah. Arthur Vickers was the man who was supposed to guard the jewels, but he was known for getting drunk and taking them out of their safe. But nobody could ever prove he took them, so we don't know where they went. In August 2012, a Massachusetts man stole a valuable diamond from a guy who was selling it on Craigslist. Basically, he met the guy to look at the diamond, grabbed it, and ran.
Wow.
But the thief was caught when he did what? A, he responded to an ad placed by the police for an even bigger diamond with the text, bet you can't steal this one. B, he sued the guy he stole from for fraud when the diamond proved to be slightly smaller than advertised in Craigslist. Or C, he constantly texted the victim about his anxiety and guilt about stealing the diamond.
I'm going with C.
You're going to go with C. You're right.
Wow.
The guy started sending texts because he had the guy's phone number via Craigslist. So he started sending texts to the victim. And the last one begged the victim to come get him because he was having a panic attack.
That just sounds like a personal ad on Craigslist.
Yeah, I know. It really does.
How many roses?
All right. Let's see if you can be perfect here because you are showing a surprisingly alarming amount of expertise. Just a few weeks ago, a pair of Ohio jewel thieves snatched 26 diamond rings, but their getaway was foiled when what happened? They counted, realized they only had 20 total fingers, so they had no way of taking the extra six rings. B, they got stuck in the elevator and had to be rescued by police. Or C, their getaway car was impounded for spewing 40 times the allowable limit of nitrogen oxide.
They could have got pulled over from their exhaust system being too bad. I'm going to go with B, though.
You're right again, Jewel. Very good.
Impressive.
Bill, how did Jewel do in our quiz?
Well, she did all right. 3-0.
Congratulations.
Congratulations, Jewel.
Well done.
Thank you.
Jewel's new book is Never Broken. It is an amazing story, and yes, it does end well. Her new album is picking up the pieces. Jewel, thank you so much for joining us on Wait.
Thanks, guys.
Great to talk to you, Jewel.
Hey, Tom, thanks.
Take care.
Bye.